So I'm delighted to welcome today Evelina. We're doing a very short hop-on call here talking about the amazing project that she's working on with her team. And Evelina is the CEO and founder of the Elite Mind Academy. I'm not even going to begin to try and pronounce your surname, Evelina. So,
thank you for having me, Elaine.
how do you pronounce it out of interest?
It's Dzimanavičiūtė, and it's from Lithuania originally, and we don't have prefixes in our before our surname is actually included. Mr. Miss Mrs. is included in the ending of our surname. That's what makes it so long and unpronounceable.
Okay. Well, welcome. My grandmother was called Eve, and my daughter's middle name is Evelyn. So we're in good company. So tell us about a little bit about the Elite Mind Academy and how you got involved with this project and a bit about the project itself.
Yeah, so the purpose of this project, and actually this company has been incorporated just before the pandemic, actually. And our goal initially was to support other experts in health and well-being and care to help themselves, you know. So we kind of asked that question, you know, as you working so hard supporting and helping others, who supports you? And we really wanted to be that place of support to help others. And how we got there was that my background is in two different areas. On one hand, I was working as a consultant for talent strategy and leadership development in a corporate environment. And on the other hand, I was working as a therapist and a coach with people who are suicidal, with people who are struggling with a variety of long-term mental health conditions. And at some point, I ended up combining the two and set up my consultancy with a goal of still growing and scaling businesses, but in a way that it doesn't come at the cost of people's health and well-being, right? So as I had that kind of unique blend of therapy and therapeutic work, but I was applying it in businesses, I had a lot of other coaches and therapists and consultants who were coming to me for mentorship and saying, well, I would like to work with these clients and I would like to know how to start my business. And you know, I don't have that support and I don't know how to find my clients. So I kind of started that initiative of supporting other experts from that perspective. But then it grew into something much, much bigger than that, because we realized that if we want to help other experts to really make an impact at scale, we really have to work towards the common shared model towards the common industry standard for how does that good looks like in organizational well-being. And if I'm bringing a collection of different experts to work together, we have to have shared ways of how we measure success. We have to have shared definitions of how organizational well-being looks like in organizations. And we realize that this is a huge problem that corporate businesses and in general organizations are experiencing, that they don't know how well-being looks like, and they don't know what good looks like in organizational well-being. The industry is full of these kind of superficial tick box solutions, and it's no one's fault, really. It's the lack of the standards, the lack of the guidance, is the fact that the best health experts lack business strategy knowledge, and the fact that, you know, HR and some of those professionals in corporates don't have a depth of their holistic health and well-being. So we really looked at some opportunities of how to kind of standardize and how to build some of those assessments. We started building psychometrics and measures, how to measure the impact and how to measure health and well-being on individual level, how to measure the health of organizations at the company level. And as we were increasing awareness of the topic and the need for the standard, then some opportunity came our way from Innovate UK competition it's been shared with us to submit a proposal for funding. So we've been awarded the funding specifically with a criteria to design national guidelines for organizational well-being strategy. And yeah, we are really aiming to identify people's needs, unmet people's needs in businesses, and create a way to build organizational well-being strategy in a way that meets those needs, and also create a systems and feedback loops that would allow us to feed back the impact of our initiatives, of our interventions, to see what impact it has on those individuals, but also the same system then can be used to choose the right providers and to work with the right people and to bring other experts on board to really make an impact at scale.
I'm really excited about this whole concept, Evelyn, as we spoke off camera about this, because there, as you say, there are no standards, and I'm forever kind of throwing my hands up in horror when people say, oh, this organization looks after their staff. Well, what do? They give them a gym pass. Well, yeah, but they're working so much, they never have time to go to the gym. Oh, but they offer health and well-being lunches. They offer, you know, all these different things. And as you said, it's a tick box exercise. So walking the talk is totally different to actually saying that you've got a strategy and implementation, and also the return on investment. And I think that's a missing piece, because so many organizations, they weigh up the cost, the effort, the stress and all the rest of it, and they go, oh no, it's too difficult, and they move on.
Absolutely. And I think the key in here is that when we do this right, it is not an extra cost. The best well-being interventions are embedded in your company's way of working. So it can be a huge cost saving, because you don't have to have, you know, the list of other providers and these workshops and apps and elaborate, you know, platforms with all their libraries of resources, if you really know how to support your people in the right way, right? And the questions that we are really answering is, how do you first make sure that everything you do is tailored to your people's needs? So it's not something that, you know, your competitors are doing, or because it looks good for the marketing, or, you know, some HR person decided that this is a good idea, or sometimes it's initiatives that are marketed in the nicest way that it gets the most attention, but that's not the ones that drive the biggest impact, right? But if we have a process and we can show companies how to identify what your employees really need and what are they missing, and then we find a way to assess how your company is currently meeting those needs for your employees, and then we look at then designing interventions specifically to meet those needs and in a way that has this kind of measurable feedback loops, then it's a win-win, because it's not creating dependency on external providers, is actually building internal capacity and building that resilience. And therefore, the role of those external providers becomes very different, because it's very tailored to build specific skills, to highlight specific levels of awareness, to, you know, improve specific capacity internally, rather than, you know, creating this kind of unhealthy relationships between, you know, suppliers and your company operations.
Absolutely. I work with lawyers and accountants, as you know, and the reason I do that is because dealing with the senior leadership, the managing partners, the managing directors, etc., who are open-minded to truly walking the talk and looking after their staff, they realise the return on investment is absolutely huge. And as you say, they don't actually need to do an awful lot extra, but by making things available to their team members and supporting them and encouraging them to take part in whatever the thing is. And everybody's, you know, has got, every organization has got individual needs. Manufacturing, professional services, retailing, we'll all have different needs. So I love the idea that it's specific to different industry sectors at a research level, but then at a national level, when you produce the results, it's going to be all encompassing, that everybody can, you know, can adhere to these basic standards.
Absolutely, because when you look right now, there is no even a standard definition of what organizational well-being is.
Yes.
People don't even know the difference between wellness and well-being. People don't know the difference between mental health and mental illness, right? And all of those are different things, and therefore it requires different action. And some of those things are responsibility of individual. there are things that it's up to each of and every one of us to be able to act on our own, you know, practices of self-care. But then there are responsibilities of employer. And then also there are boundaries how much employers should go to support their employees, because we cannot expect managers to also become therapists for their employees, right? So where is that boundary? How far the company should be supporting, and what happens when it's beyond that boundary? And who do your people go to? And that's where the role of expert providers comes in, because you know we need to build the internal capacity, but we cannot overload ourselves with things that shouldn't be, you know, part of our job role, and it's not actually helping our business, right? So like our definition of organizational well-being is a process that drives human, economic, and environmental outputs and sustainability, right? We need to embed those processes into the business. That company knows how to drive health well-being through your training and development, through your recruitment, through your management support, through your leadership, through your, you know, communication and reporting lines, through your governance and compliance. So it's not an app and it's not just your gym membership. It's really looking at the wider ecosystem of relationship between the individual and their individual needs and struggles and all of their unique identity. And what happens to that individual when they're placed in the working environment? And when that person brings their own personal struggles, how that changes environment, how it manifests in the work performance and productivity, in the work relationships, and other way around. When we tweak something in a working environment, when we adjust our training, when we adjust our reporting lines, when we, you know, correct our policies and procedures, and we make sure that we really have healthy culture and ways of working, how does that then impact on each individual ability to provide for their own health and well-being needs, right? So it's really creating this ecosystem of support rather than, you know, kind of finger pointing and blaming and kind of creating the reliance on external support.
Absolutely. So I think it's absolutely fantastic, as I've said. How do we take this forward? Who should be applying to you? What type of organizations? What size? What industry sector? How do they get hold of you?
Yeah, so we really interview organizations on case-by-case basis, and we are really looking for a mutual benefit that they have access to users for us for research. They are willing to contribute their feedback in co-designing the process with us. Initially, we looked at specific size of the organizations, but actually we scraped that away because we understand that even smaller organizations, that they can add a lot of value in a different ways. So for as long as companies prepared to work with us to give access to their company's ways of working, to interview their people, to go with us through the process of giving feedback on our processes and help us to co-design that strategy, then the output that we co-create together, there are kind of double-sided benefits for that, right? So we receive data and information and feedback on how we work and our consulting process. And the company in return receives custom designed framework and implementation strategy for 12-month roadmap of what needs to happen next. And within that 12-month roadmap, we make specific recommendations of services. So we are also looking for companies who are then willing to take action and actually invest in their employee development and invest in some of those services. However, the whole research part is fully funded. So for as long as companies keen to go through entire process and test the full flow, I'd love to have a chat with them and explore, and you can reach out to me on LinkedIn or also by emailing research@elitemind.co.uk, and one of our team will get in touch to book a chat and explore.
That's brilliant. So it doesn't matter then the size of the organisation or the industry sector, and anybody who, the key thing is the willingness to and the ability to participate and co-design.
Absolutely, because the fact that we're designing national standard, it has to be replicable across different sizes of the organization. It has to be applicable for different industries, for different sectors. And therefore, we are looking for representative of different sectors. So if we already have a research partner that is representative of very, very similar, you know, size of the business and organization and so on, that, you know, that's also kind of part of our criteria. But again, it's very difficult to tell because we are shaping those relationships with every research partner on each cases separately. And for as long as they are willing to involve in the process and the co-design, then there are mutual benefits for us.
Brilliant. So which funding pot is it? Did you say Innovate UK?
It's Innovate UK, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. So it's a recognised funding pot, and your organisation is the Elite Mind Academy, and the email address for inquiries to go to?
That would be research@elitemind.co.uk. Or also you can email me directly at evelina@elitemind.co.uk.
Or find you on LinkedIn.
Yes, absolutely.
Marvellous. Thank you very much for your time, Evelina. I look forward to working with you on this project and seeing what comes at the end of it. Very exciting.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your support, Elaine.